For those of you who don't know, because this is going back a few years now, back in like 96, 97, at one point I was commissioned by Warner Brothers to write a script for a new Superman movie. And how it came about, I think, was that somebody saw Mallrats, somebody at Warner Brothers, some studio exec, and was just like, watched Brody and T.S. talk about the kryptonite condom. And they were like, this guy seems to know a lot about Superman. So I got called in for a meeting at Warner Brothers, and they said, there's a couple of projects that you can rewrite, because at this point, the script for Chasing Amy had started to circulate, and people were like, oh, he can write after all. So they were like offering me rewrite work. So I went into Warner Brothers and said, we have three projects we could throw your way. I said, all right, what are they? And they said, one is a remake of an Outer Limits episode called The Architects of Fear. The second is Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian. To which I was like, really, didn't we say all we needed to say with the first Beetlejuice? Must we go tropical? And the third was a project called Superman Reborn, and that's what piqued my interest. I was like, Superman? You guys are going to make another Superman movie? And they said, we're thinking about it. I said, can I would love to do that. And they said, well, that's a long shot. I can't give you that right here in the room. That has to go through a bunch of people because it's a big Warner Brothers franchise. So I said, well, what do I have to do? Whose fucking dick do I have to suck to get this job? And thankfully, he didn't say his. But he said, you know what? Why don't you take the script home? We have a draft of it. Take it home, read it, and tell me what you think about it. So I said, all right. I read the script, and I was just like, this is fucking terrible. This is a horrible script. I mean, it was just really, really bad. It was kind of like the Batman TV show version of a Superman movie. Very campy. So I went back to Warner Brothers 2 days later and sat down with the dude, and he was like, what'd you think? I said, well, it was really quite bad. And he was like, well, bad meaning good? And I said, no, bad, just fucking terrible. And he said, he's looking at me, and I'm just going on for about 5 minutes how bad the script is. And I was like, do you pay somebody to write this? Is this somebody's, the writer of this script, somebody's fucking cousin? Because who lets somebody write this script? Do somebody, you pay this dude? Can you get the money back? Because this is horrendous, dude, horrendous. And he was looking at me, nodding and going, all right, well, thanks for coming in. So I left and I was driving home. And I got home and I called my friend Walter, who's back in Jersey, and he's a big comic book fan. And I was like, dude, I just went into Warner Brothers and told them their script for Superman sucked. Ah. Revel, revel, Jersey represent. Ah. Fuck Hollywood. Ah. And Walter's like, well, why didn't you just offer to write a better version? And I was like, ah. Because I hadn't thought of that.
Welcome to Two Old Farts Talk Sci-Fi. I'm David Klink.
And I'm Troy Harkin, and we're back.
We're back to do the beginning of the second part of movies.
Superman movies, because we went long.
Super long.
We now are ready to give you that second part, aren't we? We're back.
Yeah, and I'm even wondering where we're actually even going to start, because this is all in post, and this is where Troy earns his pay for the week and does all this wonderful, amazing stuff behind the scenes. Because I have a funny feeling it might even begin with the Henry Cavill ones, but I don't know where we've broken off, but we're back now.
Yeah, we were lost in the Phantom Zone, but we're back with Superman at the Movies Part 2.
And we continue the episode.
The Dave and Troy cut.
All right.
Okay, I'm just going to touch on a film that wasn't a film, which was Superman Lives. For a couple of years there, it tried to get made in the 1990s. Tim Burton was slated to direct the film, and John Peters was the ongoing producer of this thing. For a while there, Kevin Smith, among other people, was slated to write it. And I think originally it was called Superman Reborn or something, but anyway, Kevin Smith came up with Superman Lives, and this is an aborted film that has seen elements of it appear in other recent Superman films. The film was to be centered around the death and return of Superman, like in the comic books. And there were many actors' names kicked around in connection with Superman Lives, but here are some of the most common, and Nicolas Cage, basically, he was committed to this. He did a number of different tests for it in front of the camera, wearing the suit, bouncing ideas around on how the character should be played. But yeah, he was supposed to be Superman and Clark Kent. Sandra Bullock or Courtney Cox as Lois Lane. And I think they both would have been excellent. Mm. I think there's something about Courtney Cox that is very Margot Kidder. You know, I think she could have stepped into that role really well. Chris Rock as Jimmy Olsen. That's interesting. And that I kind of would have liked to have seen. Christopher Walken was supposed to be Brainiac, and Kevin Spacey was slated to play Lex Luthor, as he would later do in another produced film by John Peters. Pretty cool potential casting there, eh, David?
Yeah, and it's just too bad about Batman and Robin, which I guess lent towards this, because you have a note here that they pulled the plug after Batman and Robin. Maybe just the studio didn't want to invest. You know, it's weird. Because I forgot to mention this, Troy, but you know, at the beginning, the very beginning of the film, they show the Warner Brother logo. Then you start hearing the wonderful music from As Time Goes By from Casablanca, which is just so wrong at the beginning of Superman IV, A Quest for Peace. They should have a level of stand. You should have, if you're the ones that made Casablanca, do you not have a minimum standard?
Yeah.
Sorry for going backward in time here.
Yeah.
But it's good they did not greenlit like this, because
yes, they knew. Like, see, because now we've moved out of the cocaine era. Mm. You know, like, it's the 90s now. There are other drugs of choices, but cocaine is not one of them. And again, imagine what Casablanca would have been like if they were all on cocaine.
Yeah, and they should remake it with Nicolas Cage and others, but no, maybe they can't.
And put them on coke and just see how it goes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, just saying that's what they'll call it too, the cocaine cut.
Oh my God.
That would be that would be something.
All right, we're getting a bit silly.
I know, and we are. And we're going along, so we're going to have to go a little shorter on some of the later films here. But in 2006, Superman Returns was released. It was directed by Bryan Singer, who was coming off the success of his Marvel X-Men films. Superman Returns comes 10 years after the aborted Superman Lives project and 20 years after the god-awful Superman IV. But Warner Brothers seemed to be emboldened by the success of Smallville on the small screen and the audience's apparent growing appetite for superhero films. Relative unknown actor Brandon Routh was brought in to play the dual roles of Clark Kent and Superman. And generally, that seems to be the way you want to go with Superman. I mean, it would have been an exception to have Nicolas Cage play Superman. Generally, you go with an unknown so that you can just buy into this guy in tights and whatnot. Superman Returns was intended as a follow-up to Superman 2. That's where it sort of gets retconned. It's supposed to follow. So that's, I guess, Warner Brothers trying to say, please forget about Superman 3 and 4. Please. They didn't exist, okay? Please. The Man of Steel has been away from Earth for a few years, and he is, as the title totally spoils, he returns. He returns to find Lois has a young son and a fiance. He also returns to find his nemesis Lex Luthor is once again planning to terraform the Earth for his personal gain and glory. Kevin Spacey played a wonderfully narcissistic Lex Luthor, while Kate Bosworth stepped in to the role of Lois. The film made $391 million at the box office, and although Brandon Routh has yet to return to the role of Superman on the big screen, he did portray a version of Superman on television's DC Legends of Tomorrow, and I was really happy to see that happen. Although the film was not to everyone's liking, it does sit nicely between Christopher Reeve's gentle portrayal of Superman and Henry Cavill's edgier Man of Steel. David, I went right down the middle here. I gave it I guess 2.5 would be the middle, but so I gave it a 3 out of 5 Super S's. I still find it a good watch. I just wasn't nuts about the super young Lois. But then again, we're two old farts, so I guess everybody is younger than us. How'd you feel about it?
Well, I had my back up against Brandon Routh. Just, I wasn't giving him an opportunity, really, because I just like Christopher Reeve so much. And I just, I watched it recently. I just can't recall if I even saw it when it came out originally. But, and isn't his son, like Luther's on this yacht, and they got them trapped, like Lois and the daughter, and the son. And doesn't it appear that he has some kind of powers? The whole thing is just a bit weird.
Yeah. Well, it is weird because they go there with the kid, but then they don't really pay it off in any sort of meaningful way. Now, I don't know if they were planning to, because DC, Warner Brothers, is notorious for starting what they want to be a series of films and then scrapping it and starting over again. So, which is what they did with Superman Returns. Like, you know, they obviously wanted originally Brandon Routh to do a series of films, but when it underachieved, they scrapped it and, you know, waited. What is this? They waited almost 10 years. They wrote out the Dark Knight series with the Christopher Nolan and Christian Bale Batman success. And then sort of thought, well, let's do Superman, but sort of through the worldview of the Christopher Nolan films, where it's a little darker. One thing I will give Superman Returns and Brandon Routh is he's got the red shorts. Well done, sir. Well done. Okay. So how many stars did you give?
I think I gave it 2.5.
2.5. That's pretty, that's respectable. We then do get into Man of Steel in 2013, directed by Zack Snyder. It was released the year after Christopher Nolan's hugely successful Dark Knight trilogy. Man of Steel gave us a new on-screen Superman, introducing British actor Henry Cavill in the title role. The film made $668 million at the box office. It was the ninth highest grossing film of 2013. That's weird to think, you know, like that it was sort of that low. You make that many million and you're still in ninth place. Whereas
says that there were eight films that made over 668 million, which is insane.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you think of those first two Superman films, they were second for each one behind classics like Grease and Raiders. Yeah, and this one is like in ninth. So yeah, you're right. It is insane. It was the first live-action Superman without the red undies. So I was sad. In all previous canonical versions of Superman, part of the tension arises from Lois not knowing that Clark is Superman. In Man of Steel, it's turned on its head, and Lois is the only one, other than Martha Kent, who knows who he is. Now, it took me a long time to come to terms with that, but I kind of like that now, but it did piss me off that they were sort of reinventing things so much. But as you and I have said, this does happen all the time. You know, things do change over time. This is not the Superman that we were given originally in the 30s, and that's fine.
You also see her reporting. Like, you actually see, because in these earlier films, you don't really see Lois Lane going out and actually getting stories. Yet in this series of ones with Henry Cavill, there's the one that she's actually going and finding the ship, and she's doing all this. She's interviewing people, finding all these interesting things about this kid that was growing up with powers, and she does all of that stuff, which is what a reporter does. She also, in I think another one of these films, goes to the Middle East somewhere and is trying to resolve or figure out. Like, they actually have her doing reporter-like stuff.
Right.
Which is great.
And we both liked Amy Adams quite a lot. Lois in this series. Both Diane Lane and Amy Adams work for me really well. I like Michael Shannon as Zod. I like him in basically everything he does. And I liked Costner as Pa Kent. So a lot of that, the actual casting, I was quite fond of. One of the things that kind of tickled me, though, because for whatever reason, I always have a bugaboo with shaving or not shaving, or, you know, does hair grow or whatever. In Man of Steel, it kind of cracked me up where Clark goes up to, I guess, what is the Fortress of Solitude. He needs a shave. He has no hair product up there. But then he transforms into Superman, and all of a sudden he has a clean shave and a ton of product in his hair. I don't know what that means other than Kryptonians are incredibly well-groomed.
Fair enough. I also like in this one, because you're right about Michael Shannon, but I also like this actress who I think is a German actress. And their name is Antje, A-N-T-J-E, and then Trau, T-R-A-U-E, who basically is doing the Sarah Douglas role
right
in that. And she's very good. I always like Harry Lennox and some of the other. Like, they really cast well. They write it well. They act well. Richard Schiff, Christopher Maloney, Kevin Costner. The whole thing with Kevin. There's a few moments in the film. I should have made better notes. But in Man of Steel, where there's that hurricane thing or whatever, and there's Kevin Costner, and that moment where Clark is going to go and save him, and he holds up his hand and shakes his head and says no. Like, it's just such a powerful, there's several very strong and powerful scenes in the, you know, like when Superman emerges and there's all the people who are the soldiers, and they're all just standing there as he walks by them. And Christopher Maloney says, he's on our side, kind of like, they're just the way Snyder does it, the way he has it choreographed, the way he just, it's just beautiful. It reminds me of the best Batman films. You know, the ones with Christian Bale.
Yep. And that is a scene that I have come to terms with. It was also one that when I originally saw it, the death of Pa Kent, Jonathan Kent, I was not nuts about, because, again, I was clinging to the sort of Superman canon that I grew up with, which was always Pa Kent has a heart attack and dies. Yes. Now, clearly, not as dramatic, and also it doesn't do as many things among the characters that the scene that you just described does. But what I loved about it always as a kid was that this is Superman, or the man who will become Superman, and he still has to deal, like, if he's going to be truly human, he has to deal with the tragedies that you and I have to deal with, which is like standing by and watching a parent die, just, which I guess is still the case under the overpass. Like, he's still doing that. It's not a heart attack. But I was like, just go do it. You have super speed. You can be there and back, and nobody will know. Nobody will see you. But I guess they'll see him disappear, right? They'll see Pa Kent disappear. Okay, yeah. So see, I am totally on board with that now. And I think you're right. It does do a lot dramatically.
Yeah, yeah.
We should probably jump ahead, shouldn't we?
Yep. You had a rating though for it.
Right. I gave it a 3 out of 5 super S's. And again, I've come to like it more as it attaches to the trilogy that Zack Snyder did. I like it as the backstory, and I do now like things that I was not nuts about originally. I was also not nuts, you know, when I first saw it, about the blue filter that was over the whole film, basically. But I kind of realized that what they were going to have to do, there's a problem that DC has always had compared to Marvel. And it's this, it's a problem, but it's also a bit of a strength. The Marvel universe is all created around real world New York, right? All of these characters, Stan Lee basically envisioned as occupying the world that we know as Manhattan and the surrounding boroughs. And that's cool, because you're saying from the outset that they can cross paths at any given time. And they do in the comics, and they do in the films. That was not the case with DC Comics. DC, you know, first created Superman, and Superman lives in Metropolis, and Metropolis is basically a pseudonym for Manhattan. and Batman also lives in a pseudonym for Manhattan, which is Gotham. Yet they were never intended, at least for the first bunch of years, to commingle. And Batman was a detective story, and it was a dark detective story set at night, where he uses fear. And Superman is not that character. Superman is, as we know, referred to as the Boy Scout. And Wonder Woman also, you know, like a totally different origin with no idea from the outset that these three would come together. And so when they do, there's a little bit of you know, melding that needs to happen that is not as smooth as the Marvel Universe. So I think what they had to do was they, after the success of the Christopher Nolan Batman films that were very dark and very mature, they could not put Christopher Reeve into that universe. You know, that was not going to happen. You were not going to have that, those sunny images of Superman flying mixed in with like a Christian Bale Batman. So what they needed to do was start to meld the look of Superman's world. So they have that blue filter throughout, anticipating the eventual merger of Superman and Batman. So I came to terms with that. That's a long-winded answer to that, David. But so we get to that point. Oh, sorry, did you give your rating?
Yeah, I think you have it as a 3. I'm giving it somewhere between a 4 and 4. And I'm much more taken with the Henry Cavill set of Superman films. And they're actually like the, to me, like the Christopher Nolan set of Batman ones. And I find them very strong, very powerful, well-written, well-acted, and almost as strong as that first Christopher Reeve film, for me at least.
Yeah. Yep. No, I hear you. So then we move on to Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, which was released in 2016, also directed by Zack Snyder, written by David S. Goyer and Chris Terrio. Batman versus Superman, or BVS, as they call it, sets up a grudge match between DC and Warner Brothers' two tentpole heroes and retells a section of Frank Miller's Dark Knight comic in which Batman and Superman go toe-to-toe. Batman has a hate-on for Superman for causing catastrophic collateral damage in his battle with the Kryptonian General Zod at the end of Man of Steel, while Superman is peeved with the Caped Crusader for being a masked vigilante. In the end, the two heroes, with some help from Wonder Woman, must form an alliance and fight the giant monstrosity, Doomsday, and in doing so, Superman sacrifices his life. The world mourns. Well, this film asks a lot of deep questions about the nature of Superman. In particular, there is a montage of famous television personalities who spell it out for us.
We, as a population on this planet, have been looking for a savior. 90% of people believe in a higher power, and every religion believes in some sort of messianic figure. And when this savior character actually comes to Earth, we want to make him abide by our rules. We have to understand that this is a paradigm shift. We have to start thinking beyond politics.
Are there any moral constraints on this person? We have international law. On this Earth, every act is a political act.
Is it really surprising that the most powerful man in the world should be a figure of controversy?
To have an individual engaging in these state-level interventions should give us all pause.
Human beings have a horrible track record of following people of great power down paths that led to huge human atrocities.
We have always created icons in our own image. What we've done is we project ourselves onto him. The fact is, maybe he's not some sort of devil or Jesus character. Maybe he's just a guy trying to do the right thing.
We're talking about a being whose very existence challenges our own sense of priority in the universe. And you go back to Copernicus, where he restored the sun in the center of the known universe, displacing Earth. And you get to Darwinian evolution, and you find out we're not special on this Earth. We're just one among other life forms. And now we learn that we're not even special in the entire universe because there is Superman. There he is, an alien among us. We're not alone.
Are you, as a United States Senator, personally comfortable saying to a grieving parent, Superman could have saved your child, but on principle, we did not want him to act?
I'm not saying he shouldn't act. I'm saying he shouldn't act unilaterally.
What are we talking about here, then? Must there be a Superman?
There is.
David, I was waiting 30 years for this film. I mean, I like Affleck. I like him in his early Kevin Smith films. I liked him as Daredevil. I liked him as a director, and I like his Batfleck. So I wasn't a hater who came into this wanting to drag it through the mud. I was happy that we got, I love Jack Kirby, and Jack Kirby gave us the Parademons and Boom Tubes. We also get The Flash in the multiverse. We get the first feature film meetup of Superman and Batman. And that is an epic thing. That in itself is historic. That's right up there with King Kong and Godzilla and Frankenstein and Dracula together. I give this thing a 4 to 5. How do you feel about it?
Similarly, I had my, just like with Brandon Routh becoming Superman, I had my back up against the idea that you have to pit Batman versus Superman. I thought the whole thing was ridiculous. Because even though they have different ways of doing it, they're both forces of good in their own ways. But they had a specific setup and they did do something. There was, of course, the catastrophe and the fact that, and that whole opening scene is amazing. So I can see that. Plus, they do something where I think one of the characters' mother would be killed if he doesn't go and fight Superman, right. That kind of thing. So it is set up in such a way that they do have to. And then the whole thing, which is hopefully this film, we did do our spoiler alert, and we did, and this has been long enough ago, but the idea of two major characters in comics, two super, basically almost like superheroes, even the Batman is more, you know, he's rich is one of the films he mentions. Oh, what's your superpower? I'm rich. But to have them both have Martha as a name, like how common is Martha, and how is it that your adopted mother is Martha and your actual mother for Bruce Wayne was Martha? And the fact that that somehow is the key moment where he's calling out for Martha. He says, why are you calling out my dead mother's name? No, it's not my dead mother. It's his adopted mother. And that's how he suddenly realized that he's a human being and cares for Earth. I thought was a bit ridiculous.
You know, it's funny. I felt really stupid when that moment happened in the film, because I'd been, you know, watching in various media Batman and Superman since I was about 2. And it never really dawned on me or occurred to me that their mothers were both named Martha.
It's a very odd thing, but to be honest and to be fair, because we want to be fair here, I've watched this film many times since. I've had some people who really hate it. I said, no, there's a lot to it. There's a lot of stuff. That whole scene where he finds that file and actually goes through it and finds all these superheroes and starts trying to track them down in a later film is quite good.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And the whole thing, the whole scene with Martha and everything that goes on throughout the film on repeated viewings, it's better.
Yeah. And actually, that's one, if you watch, there's also a Snyder cut of that, which is 30 minutes longer. And it's a much better film with the addition of the 30 minutes. And the segments that involve sort of the talking heads that get into the, they're almost like a Greek chorus talking about what the subtext is and talking about the morality of this Uberman that oversees you.
That answers to no one, kind of.
Yeah, like just that as a discussion is fascinating. Okay, let's push on to our final film here. It's Justice League, which also has an alternate cut. There's Zack Snyder's cut, which came a couple of years after. The original Justice League was released in 2017. It ran 120 minutes long. And then after lockdown, but still, I guess, during the pandemic era, the Zack Snyder version was released, and it's twice as long, 242 minutes. The original version of the film made $658 million at the box office. We follow the newly minted Justice League, consisting of Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Cyborg, and Aquaman, who try to resurrect Superman in order to defeat Steppenwolf, which is another Jack Kirby character. During the post-production of the film, Zack Snyder was forced to step down from Justice League to deal with the death of his daughter. Joss Whedon stepped in as de facto director and rewrote and reshot many scenes. Warner Brothers brass insisted on many changes to Snyder's film as well as a runtime that would not exceed 2 hours. And the thing comes in at exactly 2 hours. In 2020, there were reports that Whedon's treatment of the film's cast and crew was gross and abusive, unprofessional, and completely unacceptable. Chris Terrio, the film's screenwriter, called the theatrical cut an act of vandalism. Increasingly, there were calls to release Zack Snyder's version of the film. These calls came in the form of online petitions and comments from the Justice League cast, including Ben Affleck and Gal Gadot. According to Wikipedia, Wonder Woman director Patty Jenkins said that no DC director considers Whedon's Justice League canonical, and that she had worked with Snyder to ensure Wonder Woman maintained continuity with his film. The film was released for streaming on HBO on March 18th, 2021. Here in Canada, Zack Snyder's Justice League became the most streamed content of all time on Crave, with 1.1 million viewers in 1 week. When you compare the Whedon-created Justice League to Zack Snyder's JL, Whedon's film received a dismal 39% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes compared to 71% for Snyder's cut. I pretty much like everything about the Snyder cut of Justice League, Dave, other than the aspect ratio, which you were mentioning, which we still want to know why. But watching it at home on the day of release, it felt like real event televisions, like watching something like Live Aid or Super Bowl or a Muhammad Ali fight or something. We don't get Superman for quite a long time, which is fair because he's dead through a chunk of the film, and he needs to be resurrected. But when we do get him, his return is epic. Again, we get Jack Kirby's Darkseid, which I was really pleased. I don't know why the theatrical version refused to have Darkseid. They send a messenger, Steppenwolf, guy who represents Darkseid, but they don't show Darkseid. Anyway, so I saw him for the first time, and for me, it was fanboy nirvana. One of the few things I liked in the Josh Whedon cut, though, was Flash's Pet Sematary reference. So as a Stephen King fanboy, I was very excited.
I was running the numbers while you were being an asshole, and there is a high probability that we can bring him back.
Right. But we mean bring him back in like a yay, he's back way, not in like a Pet Sematary scenario.
He's back.
He's not all right. Scanners.
What?
Arthur, you need to relax. Your adrenaline's spiking. Because he's not all right.
He's confused. He doesn't know who he is.
Pet Sematary.
And that means Stephen King exists in the DC universe. There are truly other worlds than these. So what did you like, Dave, about the about Justice League? And was it the Snyder cut you saw?
Yeah, what I do is I watched the original several times, and then I did finally see the Snyder. Now, the Snyder one I watched was the color one, because there's also even a version called the gray something or other, the gray version or the gray.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was very good. I would have to do more research about seeing what specific parts or scenes were added. It just seemed to flow so well that I wasn't there trying to pick apart all the differences.
Yeah. And you know, we would do it, but we are already running pretty long. I gave it a 4.5 out of 5. This is likely my favorite blockbuster superhero film. The only real downside is that even with a 4-hour running time, half of the film does not include Superman. So I might almost put an asterisk beside my 4.5, but that's what I'd give it.
Well, he's pretty important in the film, too. Plus, that whole moment, like the moment that stands out to me, which is just stunning the way it's actually handled, is when Superman is back and they're trying to fight him and trying to get him to reason or understand that he is a force for good and that he shouldn't be fighting them, like, and all of that stuff. And the Flash running, trying to run around him, and he notices Superman turning his head.
Yeah.
And he's thinking, how the hell is he turning as fast as I'm moving? Yeah. It's just such a brilliant moment.
So one of the things I did want to mention about the comparisons, and it seemed like with the Whedon cut in the finale, now this is spoilers, people, but we gave you a spoiler alert earlier. In the original film, the parademons turn on Steppenwolf because they feed on his sense of fear. So it's like, I felt like the brass didn't want to have the heroes kill him, right? But in the Snyder version, the Justice League gangs up on Steppenwolf, truly coming together as a team and acting as a unit for the first time, and Wonder Woman decapitates him. It's awesome. But and we like clearly they went there and they ended up with an R rating, but I thought it was great that they did that Wonder Woman takes his head off.
Yeah. And the other thing that's really nice is at the very end where they bought this whatever it is that they've got, and they're all there, and Bruce Wayne says, well, you know, we're going to build this table here, and the six of us or whatever it was, and then someone says, you know what, we're going to add more than. So there's a sense that whatever the next Justice League film will be, which I think there's supposed to be one in like 2025, maybe there was something that said when the next one might be, but adding more, because the Justice League from the comics, of course, had a lot more than just these key members. So adding more, I think, will be very cool.
Yeah, that would be great. And that's nice because that's a great way to actually expand the whole DC universe. I will mention that that's all we have for released films. In 2025, Superman Legacy is slated for release at summer 2025. The film will be written and directed by James Gunn and will star David Cornsweet as Superman and Rachel Brosnahan, who is great in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. She'll be playing Lois Lane, and I think she'll make a great Lois. She's like a classic Lois type.
Dream casting. Yeah. Dream casting, baby.
So, David, should we get into that realm of our dream casting and Schrodinger's cast?
Let's do it. It's been a while since we've done this. Do you want to explain it again, and then we'll just get to it?
Sure, let's. So with our dream casting, we are first tackling the idea of casting the general leads, the basic classic leads in Superman, with the best possible actors and actresses who have ever lived. So anything goes here. We just are looking for our idea of the best people for these roles. After this, we're going to do our Schrodinger's cast, which is nutty.
Yeah, so Troy will go over the original roles and the actors that played them in the movie. The movie, of course, is the 1978 Superman, and we've reduced our list. This season, we're basically only looking at six. We used to sometimes do eight or nine. It was just too much. So we are looking at six roles.
All right, so we had Superman and Clark Kent. That was Christopher Reeve. Lois Lane, we had Margot Kidder as the classic Lois. Ma and Pa Kent, we had Phyllis Thaxter and Glenn Ford. Jimmy Olsen, Mark McClure. Lex Luthor, Gene Hackman. And as General Zod, we had the wonderful British actor Terrence Stamp.
All right, so do you want to start with your dream cast for Superman Clark Kent?
I will. David, I went with John Hamm, who I always wanted to see as either Superman or Batman, but I've gone with John Hamm.
So yeah, John Hamm can do anything. Basically, he reminds me of almost an old style, kind of like a Humphrey Bogart. Like this is a James Stewart kind of, like when Hollywood had that star system. He's today, like George Clooney and John Hamm and many others are part of that. You know, and Tom Hanks are just amazing. So yeah. John Hamm, absolutely. I went with Idris Elba. Now, there's a reason for that.
Nice.
If he's not going to get Doctor Who, and he's not going to get Bond, damn well give him Superman, for God's sake. Come on.
Yep. And I mean, he can do anything. I love everything he's been in. And you know what? It would be great. And even if it's just to piss off the internet trolls, you know what I mean? It's like, yep. Guess what? Idris Elba's your new Superman. Suck on it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So you're Lois Lane, sir.
Okay. I'm going to give you a bit of a playoff. First of all, I don't know why this occurred to me, because I'm always complaining about people being too young, but Michelle Mallette, who plays Katie on Letterkenny, she occurred to me first of all. And then Sarah Gadden, who's actually also been on Letterkenny, and she's another Canadian actress who was in 11/22/63. And then I shook my head, cleared my head, went out for a walk, and I came up with Natalie Wood. Who is one of my all-time favorite actresses. But so Natalie Wood would be my Lois Lane in a world where we can do anything.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about Natalie Wood. She would have been perfect for it, as she is perfect with many things. I went a bit more old school, and I think she was in a film that dealt with people at a newspaper. So I went with Katharine Hepburn.
Nice. Oh, she has the moxie for Lois, too.
Oh, my goodness.
She'd be
yeah.
perfect Lois.
Yeah, even in Bringing Up Baby or whatever it was. You know, she's just that actress that can pull that off, I think.
Yep. Now, I was very happy with my Ma and Pa Kent here.
We're cheating a bit. We have these two counting as one. We put them together. But
yeah, that's okay. So we're what cheating, the hell? But yeah. Yeah, the Kents. I went with Jessica Lange as Ma Kent. So sort of Jessica Lange of recent years as Ma Kent. And as Pa Kent, I went back to the Grapes of Wrath. I went with Henry Fonda as my Pa Kent. I mean, yeah, if he's good enough for Steinbeck, he's good enough for Superman.
Yeah, Henry Fonda's had one of those great careers. I just remember Jessica Lange. I think she was in, was she in the King Kong, the Dino De Laurentiis one from 76 or so.
Yeah, which is a guilty pleasure of mine.
Yeah. But she's also been in other stuff. She wasn't in Chinatown, was she? No.
No, that was
my actress. I can see Faye Dunaway.
I can see why you would conflate those two, though.
Yeah, that was Faye Dunaway. Okay, so I went with, and by the way, great choices. I went with a bit more recent people, because Jessica Lange for me is more, feels more 70s, and Henry Fonda for a very long time. I went with very more recent people. I went with Janine Garofalo as she is about now, because she's about 50-ish in age.
Yeah.
And Jeff Bridges.
Oh, wow. That's a great pairing.
Imagine the dude as your father.
Oh, well, that would be awesome.
And he was around that age. He was around 50 when the Big Lebowski, because I checked ages when he was born and when the film came out. Both of I'm picking Jeff Bridges from the Big Lebowski period, and Janine Garofalo as she is now as the parents.
Wow. Wow, you know, you could have, like, you might still do it, but you could do a great Schrodinger's cast, because I know you often like to keep the cast of some other production, and the Big Lebowski doing Superman would have been great.
Oh, darn.
That's a great pairing, David. Jimmy Olsen, that's where we're at?
Yeah, let's go with Jimmy.
So the first person that came to mind was how great Ron Howard would have been at some point. I guess just because he was a redhead, I thought of Ed Sheeran. Anyway, I went with Ron Howard as
very good.
A great ginger, and a classic actor from, you know, again, a classic element from the Hollywood of our life, basically, to play Jimmy Olsen. Okay, who you got?
Yeah. I went with Jackie Cooper, who happened to be in some of the films. He was Perry White.
Yes,
but he was a very famous child actor. Yeah, so Jackie Cooper in the early 40s, 1940s, would have been about 20. And there was a number of films that he was in around that time. And I think that I would picture him as a very good Jimmy Olsen.
Definitely. Yep. So we're on to Lex, eh?
Yeah, my favorite character.
Ooh, hiss. So I spat out three. My initial one was Elon Musk, because Elon Musk feels totally like he is Lex Luthor. I loved Michael Rosenbaum playing Lex on Smallville. And I kind of would like to see him be able to revisit that as a slightly older man now, rather than because he played a young man in Smallville.
Absolutely.
Of course, I thought of Yul Brynner just because of the baldness. But I'm going to go with Michael Rosenbaum.
I like those choices. And why does Elon guard his Musk? Courage. No, sorry, that was too soon.
Courage.
Yeah. Courage. Okay, so anyways, I went with Vincent D'Onofrio, one of my favorite actors.
Mm.
He also was in his Homicide: Life on the Street.
Yeah, he can play an evil dude.
Yeah, and I think he was one of these characters that he was playing a bald dude in a Netflix series a number of years ago. It might have even been in Daredevil. I have to go back and try to remember it. I've seen a lot of stuff, so I sometimes conflate things, but I think he may have been the main bad guy in the Daredevil series. I'd have to look that up. Sorry that I don't have that handy.
Yeah, no problem.
But that's what I'm going is Vincent D'Onofrio.
And I guess we still have General Zod to wrap things up, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I went with Sir Laurence Olivier.
Wow.
Pulling out the big guns.
I think he would be a kick-ass Lex Luthor, that is for sure.
Yeah.
And they call it acting, sir. No, sorry. And I did just looked it up. Daredevil, the series, did have Vincent D'Onofrio, and he played Wilson Fisk in that series. And that's, by the way, the film that all those years ago that had Ben Affleck, I guess, right?
Hollywoodland?
No, Daredevil.
Oh, Daredevil, right.
Not a great film, but this series was incredible.
The series is great, yeah. Stunning. And you know what? If you check out the director's cut of Daredevil, it's a much better film.
I'll have to look for that because I am a fan of Ben Affleck, and I really had my back up with him being. I just didn't see him cast as Batman. I just have never seen it, but in the more recent films, and especially that very last one, I really am starting to see it with the Justice League and him getting everyone together, just the way he handles himself as both Batman and as Bruce Wayne.
Right.
Much better. I finally sold on him. Now, for me, for General Zod, I went with Stephen Lang, who was the main bad guy in Avatar. And he's just got that look and that kind of physique and just the way he was. I think he was also in that series. I'm not sure if he played a bad guy as well. There's a series where they go back and families go back in time 80 million years ago and they're living with dinosaurs. And he's one of the main characters in that one. I like Stephen Lang. I think he would be a very good General Zod.
Okay, now we move on to the weirdness that is Schrodinger's cast. And Schrodinger's cast is basically, it's like dream casting if we were having a stroke when we were asked to give our responses. It's kind of like, anything goes. It's a weirdness thing. And for the last number of shows, I've been just using the random name generator 9000 for my list. So it really is anything goes. David, you tend to go with sort of a theme. Not always, but you often do. So is that the case today? Is that what you did today?
Yeah, sort of. I like your idea of having done the Big Lebowski, but I wish I had now. But I do take some stuff from 1960s, mainly cowboy series. So we'll see how it goes.
All righty. Well, for the big cheese, watch of the big cheese is sort of applied to Captain Marvel, Shazam. For Superman, I have, based on the response from the random name generator 9000, Tiny Tim.
Oh my lord.
Yes. Yeah. I can't even imagine him in the uniform. I think he would have like a droopy butt. The costume would fit in an odd way, probably.
in a very odd way.
Hanging on him.
Oh, my God. Hopefully in the red trunks this time. But,
yeah. Up and away. Yeah. But that's fine. Who do you have there for your Schrodinger's
cast? Wow, that is random. That is a very, very odd.
Yeah.
I can't get past it. But anyways, I went with, from 1960 sort of cowboy series, I went with Clint Eastwood from the series Rawhide.
Ooh.
Who's Rowdy cool. Yates and the age and everything else. I think he would have. Oh, and I just looked up. The series was Terra Nova that had Stephen Lang. And that was a better film, the series, than it should have been. But I think it only went a year. But anyways, yeah, I went with Clint Eastwood.
Who I always wanted to play an older Batman when you know, this is now about 20 years ago. I would have loved that Clint Eastwood as a sort of Batman Returns type of Batman.
Yep.
Okay, we're on to Lois Lane, intrepid reporter. And this, it just came up. It was Awkwafina. So Awkwafina as Lois Lane.
Yeah, I love Awkwafina.
Yeah.
So for me, I went back in time to the 60s again. I believe this was Beverly Hillbillies, but I picked Ellie Mae. The actress that played Ellie Mae, which is Donna Douglas.
Nice. Was she also on Petticoat Junction? Was there any, like, I guess there couldn't have been, because if she was living in Beverly Hills, she couldn't have been going back to Petticoat Junction, right? Okay.
Yeah, let's get real for a moment.
Yeah. It's a part of the multiverse. In one version of the multiverse, Ellie Mae was back with the Petticoat Junction girls. Okay, am I onto my Jimmy Olsen?
Absolutely.
So my Schrodinger's cast pick for Jimmy Olsen, as supplied by the random name generator 9000, Jimmy Walker from Good Times. Dynamite.
Okay, I'm sorry. So we're supposed to be doing Ma and Pa Kent, but
I've done a spoiler.
Don't worry. Let's do this one right now. Then we'll go back to Ma and Pa Kent. So you said it was Jimmy Walker?
Yeah, as Jimmy Olsen.
Which makes it easy.
I kind of love that one.
Yeah, because like you say, "Hey, Jimmy," and then at least it's you've got the same name as. By the way, it does. I just looked up on the internet that Donna Douglas, who played Ellie Mae Clampett on the Beverly Hillbillies, eventually became a real estate agent and gospel singer, an inspirational singer, and author of books for children and adults. So,
wow,
it's nice to have a career after you've been in the Beverly Hillbillies.
That's right.
Now, for me, I've got Don Knotts
from the
Andy Griffith Show as Jimmy Olsen.
That's great.
A bit of an older, but I think he would be perfect because he always had that sort of klutzy kind of odd,
his nervousness
kind of. I loved, like, this is the thing that Alexa and I never really quite saw eye to eye because she could not stand Don Knotts. Like, recorded The Ghost in Mr. Chicken.
Right.
And I wanted to watch it with her. And she said, "No way, Jose," kind of, or just forget about that because she was not a fan.
Well, I know that our listener, Pat Lannon, the Incredible Mr. Limpet is a film that gave him nightmares.
Yeah, the animation, too, is a bit odd, too. But
yeah.
Let's go on to Ma and Pa Kent. Why not?
Okay. So for Ma Kent, I was given Flegel from The Banana Splits as Ma Kent. Do you remember The Banana Splits?
God,
no. La, 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 la.
Oh, yes.
One banana, two banana, three bananas, four, five, yes. Banana, six. Yeah. Anyway, that's
the banana. Thank you for bringing that back.
Yeah. So Flegel, who is the dog character as Ma Kent.
Oh, my God.
And that's just the way it goes with the random name generator 9000.
Wow.
Yeah. And my Pa Kent, married to Flegel, is Gordon Lightfoot.
If you could read my mind. But
yeah. Yeah, that's right. if Clark could have read his mind, he would have known not to come save him under the underpass, overpass. Yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
Can you imagine Superman just saying, hey, Flegel, I don't want you to remember this, and then kissing Flegel.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now, I just realized, too, if Clark in Man of Steel had the abilities of Superman in Superman 4, he could have like let the damage happen to the overpass that would have killed his dad, and he could have just fixed it. He could have just undid it.
Yeah.
Use the undo vision. Okay. What do you got there?
What I've got is from Green Acres. We all remember that wonderful theme song.
Oh, it's the place to be.
It is. I always thought Eva, EVA can also be Ava, but it's Eva Gabor and Eddie Albert as the Ma and Pa Kent.
That's perfect. Why not? That's repurposing at its finest.
Yeah, and that would be very cool. And hopefully they would also have the pig there.
Yeah, that's right. Wilbur. The pig, I think, right?
Yeah.
God, my brain is a useless trash heap of garbage. Okay, so General Zod, is that where we... No, not yet. Well, Lex,
We're on the final two evil baddies. So we're almost done. We got Lex Luthor first.
Yep. Now, I thought it was very appropriate that the random name generator 9000 gave me a scientist for Lex Luthor, at least in the version, because, you know, sort of in the more modern version, Lex is a philanthropist, not a philanthropist, a
business,
a rich dude.
Yes.
Yeah. And not so much this evil scientist, but I was given a scientist by random name generator 9000, and that was Bill Nye, the science guy.
Wow.
As Lex Luthor.
I would have a cross between Bill Nye and Bill Nighy and have them merged into some one super being. But I think even Lex Luthor with the latest guy who's doing it from The Social Network, I think, is part scientist,
right,
too. So at least they brought that back a bit, but also rich. So they combined both.
Yes.
So I like Bill Nye. And I've got James Arness from Gunsmoke as Lex Luthor.
Oh, cool.
Sort of a different look, but
yeah,
someone you wouldn't mess with.
And almost, you know, that's cool because, you know, Lex is not generally physically intimidating, but James Arness would be. And I like that.
Well, what was he, 6'4 or 6'6? Like, he was
something like that. And I mean, 6'4 was, you know, bigger in that era too.
Here it is. The first thing you type in Google, James Arness, the very first thing that shows up, James Arness height, then James Arness movies and like height is the first thing that shows up for him. Now he's listed as 6'7".
Holy cow.
Which is quite amazing. Which is basically 1.98 meters for those people who do. John Wayne was 1.93 meters. And Peter Graves was 1.92, Clint Walker, Dennis Weaver. There's a number of tall dudes who were in Westerns and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a naval pilot at one point. He was drafted in the U.S. Army and so on. So, yeah, James Arness would be a bit more, 6'7". That's tall.
All right, final category for Schrodinger's cast. We've got General Zod. And my General Zod is the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Holy. I like your generator.
Yeah. And I can't even imagine. Well, I mean, Stay Puft Marshmallow Man doesn't speak as far as I know. But imagine him saying, kneel before Zod. Like, that would be interesting.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
So imagine, if you will, in the Daily Planet, you could have a scene with Clark Kent, Tiny Tim, with Jimmy Walker, Jimmy Olsen, and Lois Lane, played by Awkwafina. Oh, and wow. I just realized, now I know we didn't do this, but I'm just going to give it to you. I had Jor-El, and my dream casting for Jor-El was Charlton Heston, but my Schrodinger's cast for Jor-El was Boy George, which I thought would have been interesting.
Yeah, I like that. What I've got, I think, oh yeah, I've got Lee Van Cleef.
Because
I just recently watched Escape from New York, where he's great in that. But I'm mainly covering 60s stuff. And of course, he was in a number of cowboy. My theme was sort of been cowboys or small town people like Andy Griffith and so on. So Lee Van Cleef was in one of the spaghetti westerns, I believe. The Bad and the Ugly.
Yeah, he was always intimidating.
Oh, my goodness.
So he'd actually be quite a good General Zod. And probably better than my Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Yeah, and he's very intimidating even in Escape from New York. And he's also a bit of a tall guy too, I think. Or I get the sense of Lee Van Cleef as someone who's got to be over 6 feet tall.
We should probably put a bow on this thing.
Yeah, let's do it. I had a lot of fun and it was great finally doing Justice, so to speak, or Justice League to Superman. So that's the end of our Superman Part 2 episode, looking at movies.
It was super, Dave. Please remember to catch us on your favorite podcast provider, be it Spotify or Podcast Addict or however you do it. Hope you can find us there. Well, you're listening to us now, I assume. Anyway, please check us out. Let people know. You can try our website, which is Two Old Farts. Like, you're moving the goalposts on me. Our website, 2of.ca. It's numeric 2of.ca. We're on Facebook. We're always on Facebook. So much Facebook. And you can find us there at Two Old Farts Talk Sci-Fi. Just a bunch of words. do tell a friend, like and subscribe, do those things, be kind to animals, and have a
save
super day.
The planet.
Yeah.
I am David Klink.
And I am Troy Harkin.
See you all for our next episode of Two Old Farts
Talk Sci-Fi.